We live in desperate times. The cultural slide toward the moral abyss once moved at a crawl, but now our impending demise has taken on a frenetic pace. Today on Insight for Living, you'll hear Chuck Swindoll continue our study in Matthew 5. It's here that Jesus delivered the brilliant strategy to combat the enemy. He said to his followers, "You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world." So before we decide to give up and defeat, let's remember our calling to be his agents of influence. Chuck titled today's message, "A Simple Counter Strategy: Shake and Shine."
The kind of warfare we're engaged in is not one of literal bombs and literal rockets and actual bullets fired from weapons. This is an invisible war. And it's a war that attacks not the body, but the mind, the emotions. Being invisible, you can't see those missiles that are launched from the media or from some other part of the world system. They aren't tagged with warnings. This could be detrimental to your walk with God. They just come fast and furious, and they assault. Sometime late at night, sometime in the heat of the day, sometime almost before you're out of bed in the morning. This vile world is vile. It is corrupt. It is dark. It has nothing that will enhance a walk with God. And if you take your cues from it, you will not be readied for heaven. It will weaken you. 1 John 5, and I'm looking at verse 19. I want you to see why I say the whole system is degenerate and antithetical to the things of God. John says, as he reaches the conclusion of this penetrating letter, "We know that we are of God, and we also know the whole world lies in the power of the evil one." In the same letter, chapter 2, verse 15, you will see what God tells his children about the world system. He warns us with commands that began, "Do not." "Do not love the world, nor the things in the world. If any man loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him." Now, those are just words unless you take them seriously. Child of God, listen to these words. May I take liberty with them? Stop loving the world. Stop taking your cues from the media. Stop adoring the things the world prizes. Don't love the world. If anyone loves the world, it's the proof that the Father's love is not at work in him. It's not in him at all. For all that is in the world, and now he identifies those characteristics, the lust that appeals to the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the boastful pride of life, is not from the Father, but is from the world. The world is passing away. It's easy to forget that. Is this vile world a friend of grace to help me on to God? In no way. The church is a friend to grace to get the attention of the world that needs God, which is what the Sermon on the Mount is all about. Chapter 5 of Matthew. In light of this hostility and this intense warfare, what kind of soldiers will it take? What kind of sailors will it take? What kind of people to do battle in the world? Well, are you ready? Here we are, falling in rank, poor in spirit, mourners, the gentle, those who are hungry and thirsty for a righteous life, the merciful, the pure in heart, the peacemakers. Who are you kidding? I think some must read this, and I think we're supposed to read it and say, what in the world is he getting at? I thought we lived in a dog-eat-dog world. I thought you had to be tough to make it. I mean, if you live like that, they'll make you into a doormat. No. No. As a matter of fact, they may persecute you. And verse 11, say all kinds of evil against you falsely on account of me, because your life is a rebuke to those who are lost in the swamp of the system. How in the world can soldiers armed with humility and contrition and gentleness and hunger and thirst, mercy, purity, and peace, ever make a lasting impact in a world that is so mean and tough and dark and depraved? Verse 13, by remaining salt. Verse 14, by remaining light. The only way, I repeat, to make an impact that lasts on the system is to be distinct from it, not identical to it. Look at the salt. You are the salt of the earth. If the salt has become tasteless, how will it be made salty? It is good for nothing anymore except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. Believe me, in ancient days, fishermen knew what salt was all about. There was no refrigeration. When they got their catch, they would quickly salt it down in layers of salt to keep it preserved until they could get it to the market. Salt has a preserving effect. It arrests corruption. Spread the salt. Shake it around. It adds flavor. It creates a thirst. Now, not a gob of it in one place, but just a little. I struggled a little when I found that if salt has become tasteless, how will it be made salty again? I remembered a course I took in chemistry that sodium chloride is a very stable and resilient chemical compound, and it never becomes unsalty. And it stands up against all those odds. And then it occurred to me it loses its bite when it becomes contaminated by being mixed with dirt, sand, impurities. That's when it is, verse 13, good for nothing. We have the saying in our day, if somebody is good for nothing, that's where it comes from. If you want to see a tragic spectacle, look at a person who has absorbed the world system, though he or she has come to know the Savior, and you will see tragedy in motion. You will see a tasteless, saltless, non-impacting entity walking this earth. God never intended it so. The worse our world becomes, the greater it is in need of salt. Does a person in the world feel more alive around you? Is there a thirst being created from the carefully selected times that you shake the salt? Do you make him wonder why you are so courteous, so caring? Do the neighborhood children want to be at your home because of the way you treat your children? Drawing them like a magnet to your house or your teenagers? The same. You are the light of the world. Isn't it simple? I mean, you give me 10 minutes with Jesus' words and I can pretty well confuse them. But you let them stand on their own and they're profoundly simple. Profoundly. You're the salt of the earth. You're the light of the world. Now, what's the purpose of light? To dispel darkness. That's all. That's the main purpose. When you live in the darkness and you don't even have a flashlight, you don't know where home is. And that's the way it is for the majority in the world. Some born, raised, die in cultures that have never seen the light of a flashlight. Which causes me to be all the more restless with Christians who do nothing but shine lights on themselves and one another. They have lighthouse parties where they just shine the light on all the truth, and they nitpick at one another. Put the light on the bridge. Get into the darkness. That's where light's needed. Get out of your own little all-Christian world and get out where the darkness is. Look at how he puts it. It's beautiful. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. You couldn't hide it if you tried. Just live a different life. It'll drive them nuts wondering why you don't do the things they do. Why you don't laugh at stuff they think is funny. They won't know why you live with peace of mind. They won't know why you don't worry. They won't know why you smile more than you frown. Your light's on the hill. Nor do men light a lamp and hide it under a bushel basket. They put it on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. It is amazing how light attracts. When you're in a dark place and you have one light, eyes focus on the light. The light is what gives the mariners a course to take across the seas. They set their navigational charts by the light that's light years away. That's the way it is with light. It gives a direction. It attracts attention. He says, verse 16, I love it. Let your light shine. Isn't that easy? Just let it shine. Just let it shine. Don't add extra voltage. Don't call attention. I walk in the light. You have to do that. I've been sitting on the plane. The guy next to me is boozing it up. I expect him to booze it up. I expect any person without Christ to be addicted to some habit he can't handle, to be unfaithful. I expect that lifestyle of a non-Christian, and we need to stop trying to clean up the life of a non-Christian. He doesn't have the equipment. So he gets a drink, and I'm reading or whatever, broken conversation with him, and we're talking, and he says, here, I'll buy you a beer. And I say, no, thanks. Why not? Well, I just prefer just to drink a Coke. How come? I'm a Christian! I don't have to do that. I don't have to say that. He drinks another one, drinks it down. Tell me more about this Jesus thing, you know? I'll be glad to. I don't rub his face in salt. He just knows there's a difference, and I haven't announced a thing. Just that there's a light on a hill. I saw it in the Marine Corps barracks for years. It works. You don't have to put them down for the way they're living. You just live right, and they will flock to you. Flock. They can't stand the curiosity of how come you aren't like the majority. I never find a time where Jesus said to his disciples, we got to work on getting a crowd. The crowds are getting thin. They're not coming to the evening meeting. They just came to him in the wilderness. They came on the hillside. They came at the lakeside. They came. He was so different. He was salt. He was light. What will they see? They will see your good works. What are good works? Every visible manifestation of Christ's life being normally lived out from the Christian. Every visible manifestation. They will hear your courtesy. They will detect your smile. They will discover you stop to thank them. They will hear you apologize when you were wrong. They will see you help them with their homework when they're struggling. They'll notice that you're the one that stopped along the road and gave them a hand. They'll see your good works. And they will glorify your Father who is in heaven. They will be riddled with curiosity. John R.W. Stott writes, I sometimes think how splendid it would be if non-Christians, curious to discover the secret and source of our light, were to come up to us and inquire, "Twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I wonder what you are." Isn't it a pleasure when someone says to you, "Why are you like that?" And isn't it a natural thing to respond, "I'm glad you asked. Let me tell you what's happened." May I give you a couple of three suggestions? All of them begin with the word "don't." Don't overdo it. Please. Don't call attention to the salt or the light. Just live his life. Earl Palmer said, "Perhaps the best testimony a Christian couple can give today is a reasonably good marriage." Isn't that relieving? Just a reasonably good marriage. We who are married do not have to pretend we are living as Barbie dolls on a wedding cake. We have struggles and dashed expectations too, but we offer the world a model of a reasonably good marriage, a reasonably good church, a reasonably good college fellowship. It will have radicalizing effects on the world if we offer this. Don't overdo it. You cannot walk on water, nor should you try to leave an impression that you do. Don't overdo it. Neighbors aren't won because they're told too often about Christ. They're won because they get thirsty. They get hungry. Second, don't hold back. See, this is where it pays off. You live this life, you cultivate a thirst, you attract the attention of those in the darkness and those who are living tasteless, hopeless lives. And when they come asking for information, there's the time to answer. They're rotting. They need preservation. They're dark. They need light. Take a risk. Take a risk in your good works. Launch out on a program that will make a difference in your world. I made a list of programs that we have Christians to thank for. Prison reform, abolition of slavery, medical care, helping the addicts, world missions, alternatives to abortion, exposing child abuse, establishing orphanages, making a positive influence in the political world, leadership positions in large companies that are making an impact in our world. Shake the salt. Send the light. The world will sit up and take notice if you care about those who are in need. Third, don't worry about the few who resist it. Nobody bats 1,000. Some even walked away from the master himself. Remember, he was the one they crucified. Even the great prophets and apostles were ignored, forgotten, martyred. Remember what it says in Hebrews 11? They were men of whom the world was not worthy, and they killed them. Is this vile world a friend to grace to help me on to God? In no way. The reverse is true. People who are salt and light are companions of grace who help the worldling to find direction, taste, beauty, forgiveness, preservation, eternity. Let's bow together. Please close your eyes. Some people like to live within the sound of church or chapel bell. I'd rather run a rescue shop within a yard of hell. See how dark it is inside your eyelids? That's how dark it is in most people's lives all day, every day. Remember the last time you were faced with some cataclysmic difficulty, some struggle that brought you to your knees? Most people never go to their knees. They don't know there's help there. When you live in the darkness and you don't know where the light is, you lose all sense of direction. North looks like west, east like south. When you've known only a tasteless existence, you don't even know there is salt. Right where you're sitting today, let me make real sure that you're in the light, that you have the salt to shake. Does Christ live inside your life? If he doesn't, no wonder there's no lasting impact being made. No wonder someone hasn't talked to you about how to live forever. I invite you right where you're sitting to say yes to Christ's invitation. Right now, just pull your life off to the side of the road. Sit quietly at the foot of the cross and tell the Lord you're his. You're going to run no longer. You may be a Christian, but for whatever reasons, you've begun to live a compromised life, and not only are you no soldier of the cross, no one even knows you're in the ranks. Now's the time to deal with that. Some folks are going to have a lot to explain for standing before the judgment seat of Christ. It's a haunting thought, isn't it? If you're married, just make it a point before the day ends to pray with your mate. Lord, help us in shaking the salt and in spreading the light. Give us ways of doing that so that it flows freely. Start today. If you need help with this, we have a group of carefully trained and chosen counselors who will pray and talk with you today. Come today. Our Father, I thank you for speaking today through the words of Jesus. Forgive us, do forgive us, Lord, for living lives as though everyone is in the light, for forgetting that we have salt to shake. Show us again the joy, the pleasure it is just to live different lives. Steel us for the times of affliction and misunderstanding and even hatred that will come from some. But don't let us for a moment be deterred from the work of the gospel. May it flow naturally from our lives in good works, so that they may see those good works and glorify the Father in heaven. In the name of your Son who spoke them, we pray. Amen.
It was the hymn writer Isaac Watts who wrote, "Is this vile world a friend to grace to help me on to God?" The answer is a resounding no. And that's why God has called his children to become salt and light in our generation. You're listening to Insight for Living and a message from Chuck Swindoll titled, "A Simple Counter-Strategy, Shake and Shine." There's much more from this 14-part classic series we need to hear. It's called Simple Faith, and you can access the audio files or purchase the CDs by going online to insightworld.org. As a classic series, you'll appreciate receiving the comprehensive Bible Companion Study Guide as well. There's even a bonus CD containing a personal conversation with Chuck. While on earth, Jesus demonstrated to his disciples and to the watching world how to be salt and light. Well, we're pleased to offer you a brand new devotional on this theme. It's called Shaping the Modern Disciple. This spiral-bound 15-chapter book features 15 different men. Jesus trained these disciples, not by sending them to seminary, but through personal contact. And this devotional is designed to help you become shaped into the image and likeness of Christ as well. Be prepared to jot down our contact information.
Centuries of stained glass have colored our view of the apostles. We see these men as larger-than-life heroes, missionaries, models, and martyrs.
Now, from Chuck Swindoll and Insight for Living, a devotional book called Shaping the Modern Disciple.
Men of God, yes, but it's easy to forget the apostles were just ordinary people, self-assured, self-confident fishermen who left their nets and followed Jesus, a motley crew handpicked by the Messiah.
Shaping the Modern Disciple, short chapters, helpful maps, discussion questions, perfectly suited for either personal or group study.
God used these 15 ordinary men to turn the world upside down. He'll do the same with you and me. After all, we're just ordinary people putting our nets down to follow Him.
Shaping the Modern Disciple, a spiral-bound devotional from the Bible teaching of Chuck Swindoll and your friends at Insight for Living.
At Insight for Living, we're intent on equipping you with helpful resources that deepen your walk with God. We're confident you'll find this devotional helpful. When you give a donation, you're invited to request a copy. Call 1-800-772-8888 or online go to insight.org. This book is designed for private or group settings. In fact, it's perfectly suited for either personal study or your small group at church. And it comes with our thanks for your much-needed donation of any amount. So call 1-800-772-8888. You can also make your request for the devotional book Shaping the Modern Disciple online at insight.org. Tomorrow, Chuck Swindoll explains that simplicity starts from within on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, A Simple Counter-Strategy, Shake and Shine, was copyrighted in 1988, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2014 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide.